This episode of Motherhood in Hollywood is sponsored by Kinza, the world's smartest thermometer. When my daughter is sick, I turn to my Kinza smart thermometer for peace of mind. It remembers her temperature, symptoms, and medicine history, so I don't have to. And it even lets me send it to my doctor. Amazing! Get your own Kinza at kinzahealth.com.
Come on, Mama!
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 34 of Motherhood in Hollywood. I'm Heather Brooker. Welcome to the ship of good times. My guest today on the show is comedian, actress, writer, all-around wonderful person, guru. Can I call her a guru? I think I will. She is a meditation expert and just an all-around lovely human being. Laura House is on the show today. And this is kind of a different type of podcast for me. We didn't immediately jump into business talk, you know, all about the biz, like show biz and whatnot. We get a little political today, which I don't get to do very often on the show. So I was very excited to talk to Laura about, you know, politics, the upcoming presidential race, racism. Like we run the gamut on today's show. So it's pretty interesting. Stick around for that for sure. Also a little bit different take for us here at MIH. I'm very excited. I also like to refer to myself as more than one person. It's just me. Thanks again for joining us, you guys. I want to take a second to say hello and welcome and hi, how are you, to a couple of moms that have found and discovered Motherhood in Hollywood, and I'm so glad they did. Angie Patterson, who is an actress and mom here in Hollywood, thank you so much for listening, as well as Keiko Elizabeth. Thank you so much for reaching out and telling me how much you like the show. I'm so glad you found it, and I'm so glad that we could connect, as well as Jen Whedon over at Mom Cave TV, who is listening in the car with her son. Hi, Jennifer. I promise I won't swear so much. No, I don't. And also, thank you so much to the Nanny League for such a lovely shout out they gave me recently on Instagram. Like, it's such a good feeling to know that people are listening. I know my close friends listen, and I'm so grateful that they do, because otherwise I feel like I literally am just talking to a vacuum, you know, just me and my husband. So every time you guys tweet at me or email me, reach out to me in some way on Instagram or Facebook and let me know that you're listening, it means the world to me. And it makes me feel like I am accomplishing something in life. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. Speaking of accomplishing things in life, I had a really great week this week, had some good auditions, and I have a great mom, Motherhood in Hollywood type story. I got to take Channing to an audition with me this week at CBS Radford Studios. And I don't, you know, you've heard me probably talk about this before. I don't like taking her with me on auditions simply because I just find it really distracting for me personally. This is one of those situations. The audition was on like a Friday at 4, right in the middle of her nap time. There was nobody available to watch her. My husband was at work and my friends all work, and it was just a really odd time. So I had to take her, and the casting director could not have been more lovely. It was Allison Silverberg. And just welcoming us in, like, oh, who's this? I'm so glad to meet your daughter. And as an actor, and especially as a mother, it's so reaffirming to know that you're not going to be, they're not taking away points. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're an actor in this business and you're also a parent, there's a little bit of a feeling where you're like, they're going to look at me differently if I have to bring my daughter, or if they find out I'm a parent. You know, they may not consider me fully for this part because maybe they won't think I'm available, or maybe they won't think my head is in the game. And it was just such a great confidence building and lovely moment for me to experience, to be able to take my daughter in there. And they wanted to meet her, and she sat so quietly while I read my for the part. And we left and they were like, they were just so gracious. So I seriously just walked out of that room. I didn't care if I booked it. I was just smiling and happy that I got to have that experience and share it with my daughter. And every time I have to do that, there's always a little bit of dread, but it makes such a huge difference when the casting director and producers or whoever is there is understanding. So thank you to everyone in the business who is understanding of us moms who are doing our best to juggle the loves of our lives and our passion and for our career. So yay, thanks for that. Okay, so I want to shout out really quick. I guess shout out. What am I, 12? I want to mention really quick, if you get a chance, go over to MaximumFun.org. Check out the recent episode I did for this hilarious podcast called Bunker Buddies. For those of you who know me really well, you know I am sort of obsessed with like the apocalypse and like the end of days. I know it's a little nuts. I'm not like a full on like prepper like you see on like, you know, the Travel Channel and Nat Geo and those shows. But I do prep for like disasters, earthquakes, especially in California. Like you have to. So I'm a little bit of a prepper. I talk a little bit about what it means to be a prepper as a mom over there on Bunker Buddy. So go and check that out. I also recently was a guest on Mom Cave TV. We talked a little bit about Valentine's Day and we just got super silly over on Mom Cave. And I also was on, did I say the paranormal already? Oh, sorry. I'm losing my mind. And Ha Ha's for Hoo Ha's. Those are a couple of shows I've been guests on. So if you're looking for a new podcast or you're looking for a new way to find out more about me and how silly I am, you can go and check those out. Please do. And I think that's pretty much all I got for my mommy monologue today. I'm sure there's going to be a million things I think of whenever I stop recording, but whatever, I'll just save it all for next time. Oh, okay. See, I just remembered. I kind of want to do this new thing where I'm taking phone calls from people just for funs, just for shits and gigs. If you want to call in and like tell me what you thought about the Oscars, tell me what you thought about the Grammys, or tell me what you think about Hollywood in general, or you just want to talk about mom stuff, like, you know, you've got this, you know, weird diaper rash. I don't know. I'm not an expert on that stuff, but I'll be more than happy to joke around with you about it. You can call the MIH hotline, and that number is 323-886-2456. That number again, 323-886-2456. And then what I'll do is if you've got a good question or something fun, or I think I can have fun with it, then I will put your question on the show. Woo, we're so high tech over here. All right, now I'm going to let you hear the interview I did with my friend Laura House. Okay, so this is kind of a big thrill for me.
What?
Personally.
How? Why?
Because I have a lot of questions to ask you. So Laura House is joining me today. Yeah. Yay! Laura used to be my director, my mentor, my leader at Acme. When
guru was fine.
Right. My personal guru. And so you have such an interesting career, and also especially since I've just seen your show, How to Hate Yourself.
Oh, yeah, the solo show.
Yes.
So I have nice questions. Of you to come.
Uh-huh. It was great. It was so great.
Thank you.
First of all, how amazing.
And I want to say that I wrote on a show called Mom. So I feel like that qualifies me to be here.
It totally does. I'm glad you said that, because I reached out to Gemma Baker earlier on.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
I was like, oh, she has a kid that's like my daughter's age. Well, yeah. And I was like, plus I'd just like to pick her brain about how hard it is to work on a hit TV show like that and take care of your kid. And I actually got a sweet note back from her that was like, yes, we're in production right now, but I'd still like to come on your show. And
oh, great.
That was several months ago, but I don't want to be a stalker and be like, no, hey, geez, remember me?
They really, when they're in production, you really,
oh, I'm
and,
sure.
And it is that, you know, when it's my understanding, when moms are busy, well, when anybody with a family is busy, they're busy and working, and then their free time just has to be with their family,
because
it's like they can't. But yeah, when she's off, she'll totally do it, I'm sure. I'll put in a word.
Oh, thanks, Laura.
With GB.
I was going to say, how are you enjoying? Are you sort of freelancing on this show? Or how does that work for a writer when they call you in, when you get hired to work on a show like that? Is it a weekly basis? Is it through
you
the season?
You get a contract for a certain number of weeks.
Oh, okay.
So say if the show, usually when a show is picked up initially, it's for like 13 episodes, but they've already shot the pilot.
Okay.
Usually, so it's like 12 episodes. Okay. So they might go 12. It's going to take us let's say 20 weeks to write these 12 episodes and start in production. So we're going to give you a contract for 20 weeks. And then if we want to pick up your contract after that, then you'll get a new contract for a new,
another,
you know, like if the
shows.
Show gets picked, because they, yeah. they sort of are like, if the show doesn't get picked up, then obviously
yeah.
you don't get picked
it's
up.
Not like
but
with-
if the show does, then they have the choice of like, this is working out or it isn't, okay. or we need something
Who
else.
Who decides that? The showrunner?
The showrunner, yeah.
Okay. I mean, like on Mom, could, would it be Chuck Lorre or would it be Joe
yeah,
Moneker?
It would be, I mean, on any Chuck Lorre endeavor, it's going to be Chuck Lorre.
Okay.
okay, yes.
fair enough.
But, you know, I mean, it could be the executive producer. Yeah, mostly, mm-hmm. it's the showrunner of just, because they're, like, I've been on shows where they were like, oh, we like you so much, but you're like lower level and we really need a co-EP who's like done this 20 times or
oh,
whatever.
Because of the WGA, there's actually like, I don't want to say rankings. That's
no,
not
there's
the
rankings.
Is it
there's
rankings?
There's lower okay. level, like the beginner level is staff writer. Mm-hmm. And then it's story editor, producer, co-executive producer, and executive producer. So in a way it's four really, like story editor, staff writer, story editor, producer, executive producer.
Okay, like a hierarchy.
Or co, or
okay.
you can be an executive story editor. You know, so there's sort of like 10 rungs. But each of them comes with a union, a WGA union guaranteed salary.
Oh.
So when you see it in the credits,
yeah.
obviously to a normal person, they go, oh, staff writer, that's who writes it.
Right.
Oh, editor. I guess they just look for typos and
yeah,
know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I guess they just edit it,
yeah.
you know. And it's like
because
no.
I don't think it really. It's I don't think a lot of people understand there is a distinction between the producers and the story editors and
there's
the writers.
There's a monetary distinction, but they're all writers.
Okay,
everybody's in the room writing. But you can also just to let it be really confusing. So on a
yes,
movie,
please.
Let's say a producer usually is like the put everything together person.
Yeah,
like. You know, oh, we've got this script. Let's try, you know, this script is great. Let's try to attach this star and this director. Now we'll take it to the studio and we're going to get it made and we'll try to get distribution. That's a really active producer. Okay. On TV, you can have the title producer that means you're a writer. You can have the title producer that means you're the star of the show, but it was a way for them to finagle the budget to give you more money without giving you a raise.
Yeah, because
you know
what
I mean?
Like
they're basically going, well, we'll call you a producer, so you're going to make another, you know, $8,000 a week,
yeah.
but we're technically not giving you a raise.
But maybe that star of the show isn't necessarily in the writer's room.
No, there's no way they would have time to be.
See, this is what I find interesting is like I've said a few times on the show that my ideal situation would be like Ike Barinholtz and his writing partner on the Mindy Project.
Oh.
Because he's a producer writer on that show, mm-hmm. but he also gets to be in it like in
yes.
you know smaller ways and stuff
sure,
like that. Like
yeah,
he's not
yeah.
In every scene all the time. So
like she was on The Office.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of lovely scenario where you get to write on it.
Of course.
And then you also get to be in it. And I'm just sort of curious, like, if that's a trend that's happening now, or do you think
it's because more talented
people are being discovered? Or
like, yeah, I don't think it's a trend. I think it, you know, serendipitously happens sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, they did it on The Office. They might. Mm-hmm. Do it on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I can't think of anyone. Like, I don't know if Chelsea Peretti actually writes on it, too. But
oh, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me now that you say
But a lot
that.
Of the, you know, actors are also gifted writers. But,
right. A lot of UCB people on that show.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And, you know, I started in stand-up, and you're inherently, as a stand-up, you're a writer and a performer.
Mm-hmm.
So I've faced that before, and I was on a show called Austin Stories where we weren't in the room typing, but we were definitely contributing to the writing process.
The yeah, talk about Austin Stories a little bit, because that's sort of where you dipped your toe in Hollywood a little bit, even though you were in Austin.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. I mean, we wrote it here in Hollywood, and then we shot it in Austin. But yeah, I was a stand-up. My mom made me get a teaching certificate. So I taught seventh grade and I did stand up at night for a mm-hmm. couple of years. And there was a MTV showcase mm-hmm. in Austin before YouTube. It's so funny. Even like we've been, this is off track, but related. My boyfriend and I, we've been watching the O.J. Simpson, the People versus O.J. Mm-hmm. Simpson show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only like 17 years ago, it feels like it's 50 years ago. It feels like when I was a kid and watched some black and white thing from from the 50s where you're like, what?
It was
and
a different era, the way people dress, the
but
way.
Just yeah. pre-internet.
Pre-internet, yeah.
Pre-internet was like, like even just watching not that long ago, mm-hmm. most of us were alive, was just like, oh my God. Like, because now everyone would have been tweeting about it. Everyone. People would have saying, absolutely, you have to stop them. You know, an entitled athlete doesn't get to hold up the LAPD. Like, it's insane. But these cops at the time were like, I'm not going to shoot OJ.
Right. Like,
I'm not gonna,
who's going to shoot OJ Simpson? Insane.
And now there were so just shoot him many like more opinions or stop the car.
Yeah,
but I
yeah.
mean, you know, the idea that they were like, OJ's in the back seat with a gun to his head. And the cop's like, oh, well, then right this way. You know, like, what? Like, yeah. oh, right. Oh, I forgot you're above the law. Like, what are you like? No, like, get out of the car. This is silly. Like, this is silly. And he just, yeah.
It but was the internet crazy. Has totally changed.
It's changed
everything.
Everything. And it's changed everybody's attitudes. And we all get a voice now. And it's
Chris
it's
and I were just
crazy.
Talking about this before you came over. How, because we were talking about politics and the campaign and how, like, everybody, you know, there's a big movement right now. Everybody's behind Bernie Sanders. Like, oh, we love Bernie. He's great. But then if you read about his ideas and, like, practicality, like, this may not work. But then everybody hates Hillary because she seems bitchy or whatever. And I'm like, oh, my God, can we please stop?
And then when you read her stuff, that's like she's done so many good things. And I remember when Bill was in office and a priority from when his first day in office was to get universal health care. And it went all the way through and then it failed at the very end. And it's like she's been trying to do that for years. Yeah. And like to me, that means a lot. To some people, they think that's awful. But I think it's great. Also, there's a long history of people running for president saying how totally different everything can be.
Yeah.
And
it's like the class.
It doesn't interest me.
The kid who's running for class president that's like vending machines in every room.
Well,
and
Trump sounds like that more than Sanders to me.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
But like, oh my God, it makes me laugh when like. It
makes me crazy.
I know it's, I guess I shouldn't say laugh, it's nuts. But just that he's so vague that it totally sounds like you're like when he's like, you're going to win so much. You're going to be happy all the time.
Yeah.
And clearly there are people that are like, oh, thank God, that's all we wanted to hear.
We
like
just want
to
be happy and safe.
And I think that was actually a strength of Reagan, which is legitimately a place where our president currently falls short, simply reassuring people that everything's fine. Because President Obama does, this is me personally, but I think he does a great job. He does many wonderful things, but I don't know if it's just not his style or he doesn't. I think he's not a bragger. I think probably his thinking is I'm going to let history show that I did all these great things.
Don't you think though in the beginning he let out his personality a little bit more? Like, I feel like in the beginning, he was more charismatic and he was more engaging. And that's what sort of made everybody get behind him in the first place.
In the campaign?
During the campaign.
Well, sure.
And then once he gets the job, he just kind of like.
But I feel like he's doing the job. Like, yeah. I feel like he was like, he's just doing the job.
But in terms of like connecting with the people, that sort of.
I think, and this was my understanding, you know, being a very young person, but Reagan. Really a huge strength of his was, I mean, and he was doing crazy shit.
I mean,
the people who were fighting, the people who've become office, ISIS, they were selling them arms and stuff. So it's like, he was doing terrible, awful, allowing terrible, awful things, but he was like, we're fine. And really America needs to hear that. So much of like, and I understood that time he was a great figurehead. And in some ways, it's almost, you know, and that kind of that was the rumor of like Bush Jr. that Cheney's really doing everything.
And
but
he
Bush
wasn't doing
was
anything.
Kind, I mean, it's almost kind of a.
That Cheney was the puppet master a little
but
bit.
But that it's. But I guess my point is like, maybe that's not so bad in the sense of like, it's fine for some people.
Right, right.
And kind of Trump is saying that too. I'm going to hire the best people that, you know, to do the budget. I'm going to hire the best budget people. And for
that's
defense,
true.
I'm going to hire the. I mean, he's basically saying, look, I'm just going to be a figurehead.
He's like, I think everything's going to be fine.
Look,
I'm going to hire people.
I run all these empires and I'm just going to hire the best people. That's what I do.
But
and
is that okay? Do we want that?
I don't think
do we need a president that has to do everything himself?
I don't I don't love, I'm not saying I'm supporting Trump, but
you heard it here, folks. I do think, Lorehouse, I love says Trump 2016.
But I do think that in some way, you know, that figurehead aspect looked emotionally to voters, it's mm-hmm. important because the man doesn't have any idea how to do it. He's never held an office.
No.
And he just goes, you're going to win so much. He's like Barbarino.
You're going to be so happy.
Well, I look at the other countries. I go, up your nose with a rubber hose. And then I'm going to be like, and people are just like, I just like it.
I love it. Like, everything he says is so real.
People can't even say why they like him. They're just like, I don't know.
He tells it like it is. That's what they say.
I just like it. I just feel like he's just, and it's like, well, he doesn't know anything about politics just like you.
Oh my God. I know. I can't watch.
That's why people relate to him.
I can't watch it or I'll see him in news clips because, you know, I work for a news station here in town and I'll watch the clips of him and I'm just like, what?
It's nuts.
How is this even happening? And also he's like winning. Like,
oh,
decidedly.
Shockingly so.
Yeah.
All the pundits are like, I mean, and good for them, but they've all had to go, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
I kept waiting for him to be like, you're punked.
Everybody did, yeah.
It's all a reality show or something. And he still might. There's still time.
Yes.
But I keep waiting to see what he's getting out of this. Like, he has some kind of deal with, like, the Middle East or something where he's like, watch, I'm going to go be president and then, you know, I'll buy up all your buildings in Dubai and, you know, I don't know. Like, I feel like he's got some deal. Like, he told some government, like, watch, I'm going to go do this and then we'll work out what we got to
do
when I'm president.
It's like a fun dare with some rich guy and it's like trading places.
It's like Scientology.
Rich guy in some other country.
Right. Like, he was like, look, yo, you don't think I can be president? Watch. I'm Donald Trump. Watch.
And that's, their bet was just a dollar.
Yeah. And, like, it'd be funny, on you know, when he gets elected, he'll just stand up and be like, I won, Serbia.
I believe in narcissism more than that. Like, I believe...
You think it's just all ego-driven?
Well, I'm from Texas, and when Bill Clinton mm-hmm. won, he was up against George Bush Sr.
Right.
And a little guy, history does not mention much, called Ross Perot.
I remember that guy.
Yes. So he is Texan, and mm-hmm. I knew him because uh-huh. he had put a thing in schools in Texas. And this is a guy who didn't, I don't think he had an office in Texas.
Right.
But he just was a really influential dude.
Very wealthy.
His wife had been a teacher, mm-hmm. and he was like, if kids don't have passing grades, they shouldn't be able to play sports. And that is not a radical idea now, but it was.
Yeah.
Because you're... best athletes were all flunking
everything. Yeah.
Or in our case, they couldn't be in the school play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah. Because it was like, oh, come on, just do your social studies homework.
Right, right.
But
athletes get a lot of passes.
Well, and I mean, again, like star actors and stuff, whatever it is. So he was like, no pass, no play. And I remember knowing him from that. And then he ran for president and he was like, he was the same thing. He had very vague knowledge about foreign policy, but he was like, I can balance a budget. Like, I'm rich. I'm self-made. I've made this empire. And people are like, oh, I like that. And he was kind of allowed. But what happened was he split the conservative vote, which is why, like, if it was just Bush Clinton, Bush might have won.
Right.
But he split that
conservative
vote and Clinton won.
Don't you think that that's sort of...
Which I'm glad for. I'm a progressive liberal. So I'm like, let's go all the way there.
Don't you think that's what's happening a little bit with Bernie and Hillary?
Yeah,
he's the reason that not all the liberals are backing her or Democrats are backing her is because they're so torn between the two.
I do think even without him.
Because you think we can.
Even
we
without
can have
him, people question Hillary.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, almost like you and I, almost our entire lives, and basically they've said this terrible, hateful statistic that, like, women 45 and older, like Hillary Clinton, and then women 45 and younger,
mm-hmm.
like Sanders. So they're like young women like Sanders.
Yeah, I read that. The millennials or concept, whatever. Yeah.
You know, a comment she got in trouble for. But their whole life, but think about it, if you're 20 or mm-hmm. even 30, your entire life, you've heard negative things about Hillary Clinton,
yeah.
even if they're not true.
Yeah.
All you've, like, I don't know details mm-hmm. about, and I'm, I I pre-apologize to your Catholic listeners. I don't know details about each pope and what right. they did, but I have a general. I've heard
you have a general feeling about the pope
thing that, like, oh,
that's not
some
for
weird
me.
Stuff has taken place over there, like, and some worse than others, and this one's pretty good, and you know, whatever. Like, so they've been inundated their whole lives with true or false, right. but definitely negative. Things about this woman, of course, they're like, I don't know.
Yeah, especially with Facebook and Twitter, everybody's resharing all these articles from quote unquote trusted
yeah.
news sources.
And they may be true, they may
and they
not
may be
be
not.
True,
yeah, but no one's vetting them. No one's checking on all their sources.
People have attacked her the whole time. You know, she's the kind of woman, and I feel like in the past month since that had really come out more mm-hmm. and more, she's softened. She's looking a little more vulnerable.
I feel like she's been told.
I think she's
yeah.
made an adjustment.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate. I wish she didn't have to do that.
But she can't be like, you can't have a life in politics. Do you know how hard they work?
Yeah,
they
I know.
Work so much harder than me.
You have
and
to
be a
have
woman.
To, you I have mean, to be a balls to the wall, like,
I mean,
people. And also, like, I don't want, like, a mamby-pamby, like, you know, I am.
Yeah. There's no walking yeah. around being, like, the vulnerable senator.
No.
Like,
and I don't need, and I don't need
had
that.
To, like,
yeah.
She has had to be so much better and all minorities. You have mm-hmm. to be so much better and stronger than your non-minority counterpart. Right. And the non-minority counterpart has no idea because right. they just have their own white male experience. And they're like, what? It's hard for everybody. And it's yeah. like, no. Like, look at, like, I was talking to my guy the other day about, like, Obama and how above criticism he has to be. Like, he's yeah. constantly criticized, but he can't do certain things.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because he has to be, like, you know, like, for a black man,
yeah,
he has to be
so,
like,
far above
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he can't accidentally make a comment about some beautiful woman or some, you
right,
know, like,
right.
And he doesn't. And, like,
he can't pull a Trump and talk about women
yes,
the way
he
talks
can't
about women.
Be this kind of, like, cat, you know, because he's like, I'm the first black president. Yeah. Like, I can't, like, there's just things he can't do.
Right.
And, like, or that he's, you know, to me, like, he's like, has to be so much more mature
and handle it better and
whatever,
ready for
not
whatever
lose
comes
his voice, because you right. can't be the screaming black guy and you can't be the, it's just right. like, it's insane. And people, like, a friend of mine writes about white privilege all the time, and it's like, you can't understand mm-hmm. even, like, you can't, it's just like the whole world of white privilege that people have no idea. Yeah. Because you just live in it. And when I am referring to white people specifically in this conversation, I mean, like, the ones that are the problem.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, and it's similar to, like, Bill Maher takes the stand on Muslims. And he really mm-hmm. Is very clear. And a lot of people call him racist.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, there's not other kinds of terror. Like, he's not saying all Muslims are terrorists, but he's like, all the terrorists
are Muslim.
In
yeah.
this sense, there
yeah.
is different kinds of terrorism.
Right.
But so he's like, it really is an issue. So my thing is, like, not all white people are privileged and racist, but there is a group of white people
okay.
that are pushing back on black people who are, like, going, we're getting shot at. Like,
yeah,
please
yeah.
stop.
Yeah.
And I don't like those white people.
Okay.
I would say, like, if we wanted to give them a leader, I would say, like, a Donald Trump.
Like a Trump.
And the
like
people who listen to him. And, like, I don't like those white people.
Right.
But even those, like, it's not even rich people that are for him. It's lower class. So I would say, like, there's a lot of rich white people that I don't. The people in The Big Short.
Yeah.
I don't like those white people.
Those guys.
Those are white.
What do you
Wall
think about
Street people, even though some might be brown or what, like,
right.
they're just white people.
What do you think
awful.
About in terms of, like, diversity in Hollywood? Because we've got the Oscars coming up. Oscars mm-hmm. so white, mm-hmm. hashtag. Mm-hmm. And
I,
also,
I
you're an
why,
actor.
I don't
too.
Know why Black Actors Matter wasn't.
Oh, Black hashtag. Actors Matter. Oh, that's a good one.
I was like, why?
Oscar so white. We didn't get to pick it. Nobody asked us.
Nobody had, that's for sure. I'd be a real dick if I insisted.
Right.
Change.
Be like, I'm gonna try this movement. We gotta start. We're gonna change up the hashtag. But I do want to hear, like, do you watch the Oscars? Are you a fan of the Oscars?
Yeah, I watch it. It's hard to, I don't even know how I feel. I guess I like it. I mean, I'm but I was also, like, watch the Super Bowl. I just like to do stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like the thing everybody's doing. Like,
you want to
when everybody's watching Walking Dead, I was like, I got to get on this. Or like yeah. Game of Thrones, I'm like, all right, I'm in.
Game of Thrones is amazing.
Yeah, there's just a tipping point for me where I'm like the last season of Breaking Bad, I had not watched it. Mm-hmm. I was not interested, but it was like.
But the, like, season, the fandom of it was so much.
I went caught up. Like, I'm yeah. a real follower.
Good.
I'm just a real follower.
That's good.
A lot of people won't admit it, but I'll put it out there.
You're very self-aware.
Yeah, just a real follower.
Hey, MIHers, it's Heather. I want to take a minute to tell you more about Kinsa, the world's smartest thermometer. It is truly the number one tool for mom's peace of mind because it remembers temperature, symptoms, and medications and gives you guidance on what to do next. Parents trust it and kids love it because it also has games for them to play while they're waiting for their temperature to be taken. How cool is that? Take a minute to go to kinsahealth.com, find out how you can get a Kinsa of your very own. Kinsa, the world's smartest thermometer. So tell me a little bit more. You, when you first came out here, you said you, did you start in stand-up?
Uh-huh.
And you still do stand-up?
Yes, I do.
What is it about stand-up that is attractive to you? Like, what is it about the medium that keeps you coming back for more? I'm always so impressed with people who are doing stand-up and they do it for so long. They must obviously really enjoy it.
Because I'm not famous? Is that what you mean?
No.
You keep doing it even though it's not even getting though. You really anymore. No, it's, that is, and I never quit, like, oh, I'm never going to do this again, but I didn't do it for pretty much for a long time because mm-hmm. I had some personal things and I always talked about personal things and I didn't feel like I could talk about some stuff that was
sure.
going on. So I started as I don't know. That's what speaks to me. Like I went to school and I can hear lectures, but like Chris Rock speaks to me more than, you know, like a professor or uh-huh. Roseanne spoke to me
right.
more clearly. Like
we have
it's,
to
when
talk
stuff
about
is wrapped in comedy.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. And I think sometimes something is so smart and funny and it can either be like, oh my God, I thought that. And I didn't even know I thought mm-hmm. that, which is
yeah.
amazing. Like
yeah.
you can feel like sort of healed.
Connected.
Yeah. And like made whole through this. And then sometimes you're like, I never thought of it that way. Whoa.
Yeah.
In a way that like if you like my show How to Hate Yourself, for mm-hmm. example, I didn't want to write a show called Love Yourself, you guys. Like it's funnier to me to go, no, you should hate yourself, obviously.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you how.
And here's the best way to do that. Yeah.
That because that's fun. I like that's just
it's
more
funny.
Interesting to me.
Yeah.
than
yeah.
to like the straight up message of
And we
like,
have to talk about
hate
your...
yourself. That's terrible. What a terrible thing
in,
to do.
In your show you talk a lot about a little bit about Roseanne. Don't want to give it away, no spoilers. But when I was in the audience and you were talking about how you thought Roseanne might be your mom,
mm-hmm.
I literally went, oh my God. And I looked at Brandy and I go, I wonder if Laura House is my sister. Because when I was growing up, people always told my mom she looked like Roseanne.
Oh my God.
And you kind of, and this is not a slight anyway, but you kind of have similar characteristics mm-hmm. as my mom. And you
oh,
were saying that and I was like, and I'm from Oklahoma, born
uh-huh.
and raised.
Uh-huh.
My uh-huh. mom, I'm pretty sure, had some babies early on. And maybe, like.
Is this something you've
maybe
asked
like,
her?
No.
Pretty sure
I
my
just,
mom just
think,
had a litter and
I
set them free.
I can see that happening with my mom. But I literally, for a moment, I leaned over to Brandy. And I go, oh, my God, I think Laura House might be my sister. And she goes, shut up. And
that's
I was
amazing.
Like, amazing. I was like, no, but I want to see where this is going. I also am a huge fan of Roseanne.
Yeah.
I want her to come on my podcast.
Sure.
She, I don't think, is interested, but I'm
never
going to give up, Laura. I'm never going to give
Catch
up.
Catch at the right
her.
Moment.
What is it about Roseanne and, like, women in comedy that, you know, is it women? Are you more partial to women comics? Like, you know.
Well, I mean, we didn't have much of a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there historically now, like the past 5 years is a different story.
Right.
And people, you know, girls 20 years from now, it's, you know, there's just
easier.
More and more. Well, or they're just going to have a different relationship to it.
Right.
But it's like, you know, it was Phyllis Diller
mm-hmm.
and there was Joan Rivers, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. then it was like, you know, when Roseanne came along, it was like, it was so like balls out. It was so like, yeah, this is it. It wasn't yeah. like a pot, like even like Joan Rivers, I loved all of them, but I also loved, I never thought of myself as like, oh, I can't love Eddie Murphy. I'm a girl. Like you loved Eddie Murphy.
Cause
you loved George
hilarious.
Carlin and you
yeah.
loved Bill Murray. And yeah. You know, like I didn't think I couldn't, I never thought of, I didn't count myself out because I was a girl growing up. I loved Steve Martin and mm-hmm. I loved this stuff, but then it was more like, then I saw Roseanne and was like, oh, like this is someone I relate to even mm-hmm. more than like a Joan Rivers who has a glamorous quality
sure,
that I
sure.
never locked into. But then when I saw Janine Garofalo, I was like, oh.
Right.
Like it blew me away.
Do you think
away.
It's that they were so unapologetically like, this is who I am?
They were just more like me.
Yeah.
Like for how I related. Like I don't like to dress up.
Yeah.
I don't like, you know, I didn't have a... I mean, part of it could have been unapologetic, but they just had traits that I shared and related
yeah,
to,
yeah.
and I hadn't seen this before. And, you know, like, it's like archetypically, there's like tons of different kinds of guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be the dorky guy, and you can be the buffoon guy, and you whatever. And there's only, like, for years, there was like, well, you're the hot chick that the guy's after.
Sure.
Or you're her kind of...
wacky
friend
fat friend
who people don't really want to have sex with but
right.
they will
yeah yeah like
you
your
know,
buddy
like,
takes on the friend so
yeah,
you can get
or
with
you,
the hot
you know,
girl
you're the friend that you're literally just there to go well then what happened
right
well is he gonna call do you like him like you're really just there as like the chorus to Grease just
sure.
like asking questions to just move
the story along yeah.
and you're only ever in your apartment or like the
right.
apartment next door and you just
no
come in
life.
Because your pretty friend has a problem and you're just ushering it along and
yeah.
whatever. So I just feel like not like Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids, and she'd been on TV for 15
forever,
years
yeah
but not I mean there's a real that's a real great example of the difference between a working actor and a star.
Yeah.
Like that was a star turn when she was on Bridesmaids and then people
what do you think that was about Bridesmaids that flipped her like that? Because to me, I've been a fan of her since she was Suki on
mm-hmm.
Gilmore Girls, and I know a lot of women
a
have.
Role I read for
uh-huh, right and I for me I was like, oh, she's, you know, playing one of her groundlings type characters or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, with audiences, just resonated like, oh my God, this woman is hilarious. And a similar thing has sort of happened with Rebel Wilson in Pitch Perfect, where people
oh,
are
yeah.
like, oh, these chubby gals, they're kind of funny.
Yeah.
So what do you think is happening there? Do you think it's that people are broadening their mind of who can be funny? Or if it's that these specific, you know, women in these specific roles are like, you know, unique to their situations?
I think the two things happen together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Melissa McCarthy is very specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, she was playing, like, I'm sure she wore makeup because it was a movie, but you could almost argue no makeup.
No,
you know, she's
yeah,
not a
yeah.
made up. She can look totally beautiful. And
right.
she was, like, not a made up. She's just playing this kind of gross, like, a dude. Like, she's
yeah.
playing a kind, like a truck driver guy,
mm-hmm.
but she's a lady.
Right.
And every time you saw her, it was hilarious. You know, she may have not had that exposure to a male audience, but also she stole the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's just like Jack Black at the end of High Fidelity, he stole
yeah.
the movie.
Yes.
And it's like Jack Black had been around.
Right.
But when he sang at the end of High Fidelity, it was like, oh, who's this guy? So I think sometimes there's a star turn.
Yeah.
And I think it was like that. But what it's done is you see more and more, and you might have seen it in auditions too, of like there's a buffoon girl in
yeah.
TV shows. And now people get it because they're like, you know, like how Melissa McCarthy was in this thing or how Rebel Wilson was in this
mm-hmm.
thing. And there's this nuance that like it's like every time it's just like it opens the door and broadens the spectrum for
sure.
like types of women characters. So it's not just like, oh, the one dimensional this and that. And now that women are more and more like creating and producing their own work and
right.
having it produced by there's a big trend, which I think is so cool. And to me, this is what feminism looks like, is women who are successful who reach their hand out to help other women be successful.
Right.
Your Amy Poehlers and your Amy Schumers yes. are two really clear ones, although there, you know, are several others. But it's like, you know, they just seem to make a point of helping other women. Like Amy Schumer is very quick to go, this is my crew.
Yes.
They're great.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like when I started doing comedy, it was like, kind of, it's not like anyone says this out loud.
Yeah.
But like kind of act like one of the boys and go along with that.
Yeah, I can see
and
that.
And then you just want to be accepted by the guys. And then if you're accepted, you're kind of like, well, I'm not going to be, I'm just so glad I'm accepted. And I think there's a whole new thing now that like Tina Fey represents as well of like, yeah, we've made it through mm-hmm. and there's a ton of funny women as opposed to like, yeah, we made it through, period, end of story.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, are there funny women? I don't know. Battle it out. And I think that kind of used to be the idea yeah. of like, well, they can figure it out themselves. I had to or whatever.
Yeah.
So I just, it's
a different mindset now in, for women in comedy, I think. Like, maybe not every
now
female
I
comic,
admire
but...
people younger than me,
mm-hmm.
which is weird. Like, just in the sense of like, you know, you always think ahead or where they've been. And now sure. I see women, you know, younger than me that I'm like, oh, like there's just so much good comedy right now, men and women.
Right.
But women are like, have this place now that, you know, is new and stronger and better. It's a cool evolution.
How does that translate for you? Because you write your own stuff. You write your own. Do you do features too? Or do you prefer to write for television only?
Oh, yeah. I prefer to write. I mean, I get asked to do feature work and I'm like, no.
No, thank you. Why? It just seems like it's too
kidding,
long.
That doesn't
oh, yeah. I'm like, wow, diva.
I prefer it. I'm like,
I turned down all the film offers.
All the film offers. I'm like, I what are you talking about? No, I'll write for, I like writing. I yeah. like writing comedy. So
like, what's your ideal situation then? You have a show that gets made and you get to like be the showrunner or be a producer on it or, you know, you could do like an Amy Schumer type situation where you bring on all your friends. You have this great group of, you know, this great crew working on your show.
What? Yeah. I guess all those sound good.
Yeah.
I honestly don't spend much time anymore thinking about my ideal situation.
Okay.
Because it makes me sad.
Okay.
Because I've sold 3 shows.
Yeah.
And they didn't go.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And there's the secret. It isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you
can't
just
secret it.
Want something and it mm-hmm. happens. Or feel, you know, you can feel totally in alignment and still get your ass handed to you. And
yeah.
So I've kind of, I don't want to be bitter and I do a lot of work to avoid it, but it's so painful. So like last year, I mean, yes, my ideal situation would be acting and writing on something and mm-hmm. really on any level working with people that, I connected to and, you know, like I'm up for a job right now that like, I think it would be amazing to get, but it's like writing and maybe there would be some acting on it and
yeah.
you know, who knows? And, yeah. and people are more, maybe more open to that now. I don't know. But
yeah,
like last year. So, Katie Sagal was interested in a script I wrote and we have sold one together before and she was interested in producing a script. So we went around, I created How to Hate Yourself as a half hour show right. and we went around pitching it everywhere. I mean, mm-hmm. Amazon and Netflix and
yeah.
everyone is like, oh, so good. And I love it. Oh no. And they passed. And
uh-huh.
so it's like,
that's so frustrating.
You know, at that point, like my ideal would have been like, yes, like someone who does serialized comedy, which I think that's a cool trend now of
yeah.
like it's episodic, but it's, you're meant to watch them all, you know,
like all in one
in
sitting
order, in a way,
yeah.
You know, in a sitting maybe, but also, you know, in or like they're not being released weekly.
Right, right.
And there's a serialized element to that. Like Kimmy Schmidt has a great
yeah.
serialized element to it.
Yeah.
I guess that would, you know, that would have been my ideal was, you know, to like have someone buy that and we make it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I try to.
Do you feel like you're sort of open to like whatever happens, happens?
Yeah. I feel like I just have to show up and have an experience
mm-hmm.
because when I get into like how I, even though like you're how you phrased it is perfect, I tend to get weird of like when I think of like, what is my ideal? And then I'm like, well, the world's unfair or whatever, which isn't necessarily everyone's reaction to that. It can be a positive thing to think about. I just get like, anyway, so I've had several jobs like years ago, a friend of mine was like, hey, you know, I'm writing for this Rosie O'Donnell show and in Chicago, and I was ready for a change and I was ready for a job. And I was like, oh my God. And I'm all spiritual and I'm going to go to Harpo. And it was like the most painful work experience I've ever had. So really? I was like,
I don't dream anymore.
I'm just not going to dream anymore. I'm just going to try to do a lot of art or work, you know.
And a lot of that, do you give credit to your yoga, your spiritual meditation side?
Yeah. I mean, I guess. Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah. I mean, meditation helps. I've been meditating for like 9 years or something. Yeah. And I've taught it for like 8 or 7. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start offering it to comedians at the Improv.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, to like teach an easy mindful thing because it's
hard for comics. Do you think comedians would be receptive to that? Or do you think they'd be like, no, fuck that. I don't need it, you know. I say that because we went to Flappers last night and we saw a comedy show. We saw Mary Lynn Rice Cup.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm saying her name right.
Uh-huh. Yes.
She was very funny and also a mom, and I would love for her to come on my show. Yeah. But I was trying not to stalk her after the show because that's weird.
Yeah.
But every other person before her, with Eliza Skinner was on, and she was really funny. But
she is funny.
All the male dudes were just dick jokes, pussy jokes, like come on your stomach jokes. And I was like, what am I watching? And the one guy came out and he was like making jokes about being on cocaine and why is anyone on cocaine? And we were like, well, it's not the '80s anymore. And we're all grown ups and hilarious. It's 10 o'clock on a Friday night. Like, come on. But yeah, I didn't understand why they all seem so like nervous and jittery and rattled. And I thought, well, maybe they're, you know, maybe it's just their thing. But all of them, the men were like that.
Interesting.
It was interesting. Where the women came out, super smooth, cool, chill.
Isn't that amazing? There's another podcast that's so good called The Jackie and Lori Show with Jackie Cation and Lori
Kilmartin. Lori Kilmartin was on my show at
that
Acme.
Makes sense. Yeah. She's got a kid.
Uh-huh. She came on and did my live show at Acme.
That's so smart.
With Danielle Koenig.
Oh,
she was great.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
they
brought
the
house down. It was great.
Of course, they're both great girls. But it's like for all of the, it's similar to what I said. Like minorities have to be better. So it's like white men get to be like, nobody has to relate. I'm just being gross. Whatever.
Yes.
I have infinite opportunities. And women are like, I better be good because someone's going to say women aren't funny.
Or she's a bitch or
it's
whatever.
Like, Eliza Skinner doesn't represent all women. I mean, it'd be awesome if she did.
Yeah.
But she's great. They're both great. But it's like, you don't like Natasha Leggero at the roast that Kevin Hart.
Yes.
She was like the funny, I mean, Martha Stewart was so funny, but inherently she's going to be funny.
Right?
But it was, the Justin Bieber roast. She was so funny.
Was so
and then
funny.
Some, then like Chris D'Elia or Delia.
Yeah,
was,
D'Elia.
D'Elia
yeah.
was just like, what? Whatever.
Yeah,
what are we even doing here?
I hope Justin Bieber fans.
And it's like, do you think Whitney Cummings could have gotten away with that? It's like, no. It would have been like, whoa, what's going on over there?
Yeah,
like,
no.
So it's, but also I think some comics meditate and would be really into it and others might not. It sounds like those might've been newer comics who were really trying to just get big laughs.
Yeah. Eddie Pepitone was good. He's not a new comic, but he was great.
And he's hilarious and he does meditate.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I would never have pegged that.
Yeah. So that's another thing about meditation. You don't have to be like
a type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Howard Stern meditates.
Oh, okay. I feel like I could see that, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got such a cool swagger and confidence that I imagine he has a centering.
But he also dresses up as fart man. So, I mean, he's...
true. He's done that for a while, but
he also just talks about hot chicks
and masturbating.
And
boobs and all that
so
stuff.
So it's really... Wow. But yeah, there, you don't have to be like, you know, like
a certain
you're
going
to turn into Wayne Dyer or something to like...
I would love to be able to get into meditation. I just don't think I could quiet my mind enough to do it. It would take some effort.
That's why you have meditation.
Effort.
Because it shows you how to do the whole process.
I know. I need
and it's
to
not
do
about
it.
Quieting your mind also. That's a mis...
Okay, so maybe that's where a
misbelief.
I think also I hate yoga and I sometimes link the two together.
Yeah, they're
I can't
different.
Do yoga. I just can't.
I barely do yoga.
It hurts.
I do the real beginner, like restorative yoga. I enjoy,
like, just gentle stretching.
Yes, it's basically like put your leg here and now just kind of lay there for 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh,
I can totally do that.
I'm way into this.
Before you go, I do have to ask you, which I'm sure you get asked about a lot, is the Louis
Vagina.
C.K.
Oh, that what? Too.
Okay.
What?
What
happened?
The Louis C.K.
Louis C.K.
thing.
Affair.
How long were you guys dating
with him?
And did he put it in your butt?
No. Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from? Because he was like, Laura House is the best thing ever. Maybe paraphrasing.
I love that quote, by the way. Definitely. That's paraphrasing. Definitely what he said. Louis C.K. said, was asked.
In like a Reddit.
In a Reddit AMA, what women do you think are funny? And I feel like, I couldn't hear his tone. I was reading it. But I feel like in his tone, it was like, there's a ton of like, ugh. You know, like women are never, hey, do you think any men are funny? You know, like, no, because culturally we believe that men are totally funny. So it's,
right.
But we're not sure about women. So you wait. And he was like, there's a ton of funny women. And he named all these women. And at the end he said, my name.
But he didn't just say your name. He's like, and like Laura House is one of the funniest women I've ever met. I mean, it was something like very specific like that, where it's like, if you haven't met Laura House, then you obviously know Laura House.
I'm just gonna let it live as you have said it. That is not what it says, but I like that. I like that tone. That was your takeaway. That the tone was.
But didn't he also put you at the end?
It was at the very end
of his comedy special, right? I saw you in the credits. Your name is in the credits of his.
You're making it up.
I swear to Jesus, who I don't know if you believe in,
and
but
this is how I found out Louis C.K. is in love with me. That's not true.
No,
it can't be true.
I'm gonna Google it. Where's my computer? I can't, or my computer will die.
No, you get that back to me. You tweet that to me.
So at the end of his comedy special, where he did like a show in the round in New York, in your name is in the credits as a special thing.
It's. Not
I
possible,
swear to God.
But also,
Chris and I God both paused it and we screamed at the TV.
I can't imagine what you were on. You were like,
we might have been drunk.
You were punch drunk from your kid keeping you up all night. But it came from working with him. I mean, just really simply. But
where did you work with him?
Just stand up with at Cobb's in San Francisco. And we may have worked together in Texas a week too. But I've just, I just done a show. I have performed with him. That's all.
Yeah.
But here's what's really flattering. And as women, we're not supposed to like anything about ourselves or ever feel good.
No,
toward ourselves,
absolutely not. Because then you're an arrogant
bitch.
So
insane. It's like I catch myself and then I double catch myself. Like, oh, I shouldn't.
Of course you should.
I had not worked with him. It had been at least 10 years.
Yeah,
I hadn't seen him for decades. So the idea that my name was rattling around his head was pretty cool.
Yeah,
to me.
Absolutely.
Because it was like the next day he was on the cover of Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, and also that was the day it was a Thursday because I had helped out on the Mom pilot and Chuck Lorre had zeroed in on me and told me I was terrific and shook my hand, which is not common.
Yeah, that's lovely.
And so I was like, what a day.
Yeah. I've made it.
You've been here long enough. You know, like you have to, because a lot of days, most days
laundry
are not like
and
that. Dishes.
Yeah.
But you have to let go. Oh, what a nice moment.
When those moments happen, like I shot an episode of Lopez, George Lopez's new show. I shot that a couple weeks ago. And small part, but still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The producers came up to me afterwards and they were like, you're so funny. And like made a point to shake my hand, which the producers don't usually do for like a small little co-star part. You know, they're like, bye. But they shook my hand and they were like, you're so funny. I hope we get to work with you again. And I literally went in my trailer and I was like, oh God, why do I get to do this every day? It's such a rewarding feeling. Just somebody taking a moment to recognize you, recognize your talent and say, I think you're great.
Yep.
You're doing a great job. It means so, so much. So everybody listening, tell someone that you know. Just stop right now.
Reach out.
Reach out and say, you're doing a great job. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah,
especially for us sensitive actors.
Yeah, I agree because it's expected that people will do a good job. So right. I think a lot of people feel like, well, why should, like, they're supposed to do a good job. Would I, like, I'm going to say if they don't do a good job, but some people are
maybe they don't want to say because they don't want to inflate egos or, you know, whatever.
Well, there is another aspect of it in defense of people who is like, they do have a ton of things to do, but sure. Really nice when people take a moment
to do that. Yeah.
Because also co-star is hard. Everybody knows everybody.
Yep.
You're
just
new kid.
In and out.
You have to like, it's all timing and chemistry, but yeah. You have to like bring that.
Yes.
Because you don't,
I've done
they
enough.
Have all developed their timing and chemistry and you're like, here's my timing and chemistry.
Yeah. You go in and you're like, it's so hard. At first, I used to be like, oh my God, I want to be friends with everyone. Can't we all be friends? Because that's how I am in my social circle. I talk to everybody. I'm very outgoing. And, you know, it's weird to go on a set where they're all like, they know I'm there for a few hours.
Yeah.
They don't have to be my best friends. And then I'm gone and they never see me again. So that took some time. That was my greenness showing in the beginning. But now I know. I go in. I have a job to do. Mm-hmm. If they want to talk to me and say I did a great job, that's awesome. But mostly... they don't because they have to a million other things to go do.
Which isn't how you thought of acting
necessarily. No,
you
know, not at all.
Like, it's so different than sort of what you think. Or when people are like, oh my God, you write sitcoms? Ugh, you just sit there and laugh all day.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
it must be just so funny.
No, that is not what happens. No. But I told one person because I couldn't get into it, but I go, I know one thing for sure. Much more fun to watch them than to write them.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh.
Like, I do imagine in my mind that a writer's room is just, everyone's laughing
just
all the time. You're drinking coffee.
Oh,
you know.
No.
I saw you.
Sometimes you're getting yelled at.
I saw you one time in your native environment on Samantha Who.
Oh, yeah.
When you were writing for Samantha Who. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, my God, that's Laura Redford House. And another Melissa McCarthy show.
It's a great show.
I just was like, man. That'd be so great. You could just sit around with your friends and make jokes all day.
Yeah.
But that's not what
it is.
It would
be great.
It's not.
That's what a podcast
sounds neat.
Is.
Yeah. That's what we're doing right now. So I want to tell you really quick before you go. First of all, thank you for directing Brandy and I in some of the most amazing
Mr. Biscuit
comedy things that we've ever done. Mm-hmm. I still get compliments from people on our Mr. Biscuit show and our the little dance number that we did at the end. I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember.
But
super
you
fun.
Helped bring the magic together. Like we had ideas and you sort of helped form that. So
thank you.
But mostly when you were my director at Acme, I'll never forget you were kind of giving everyone a pep talk one night. It was like, I think maybe before a Charlie show or... And you were like,
I'm big on pep talks.
I know. It was great, though.
I really am.
Because people are kind of feeling down. You know, we take things really personally. I'm pretty sure I cried. I hope I didn't cry to you at some point when something didn't go wrong or whatever.
I blocked it out.
I get very emotional about like stuff that I write and sketches. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, God.
And a sketch show is stressful.
Stressful.
Like, it's not SNL. It's not blah, blah, like going out to millions of people. But it's like, you have five or six completely different roles and costumes and the timing of it. And if somebody else messes, it's a lot.
You could mess up somebody else's sketch, which you never want to do.
And you haven't really done it before.
No.
You know, it's not like we did the same show for five months or whatever.
Right.
I don't remember.
It was all very off the cuff. But like, I will never forget one day before a show, you were like, you guys, like you can't be so hard on yourselves when it comes to this show because you're in Hollywood. You get to perform as an actor on a stage in Hollywood. Like, do you know how many people would kill to have that opportunity?
Aww.
And it sort of like put things in perspective, like, yeah, we are getting ready to perform in Hollywood to an audience that is
just
cheering
just like
for
we
us.
Moved
and
here
like,
for.
Yeah. And you were like, you're getting to do what you came out here to do. So just remember that. And I remember we were all like, okay, thank you, Laura. Thank you for putting in perspective. We're such assholes. And then we were good for like a second. I'm sure we all went back to being jerks. But it's true. There's something lovely about that.
I think it's a good reminder for people. And it's relatable to every person in the sense of, you know, we all get focused on what we want and don't have. And that's normal. And we all get afraid of losing things that we do have. And that's normal. And we get like, the sketch show, it's like, it's on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
So you've worked all week at a job.
Right. Right.
And then you've memorized your sketches and wrote them and then memorized them and rewrote them or whatever in your free time. And then you had to get there and you had to park and it was terrible and you got a ticket and then your agent said something stupid and then you didn't get a call back for a thing and then you whatever. And there's so much rejection involved in Hollywood that it's very easy to just feel defeated and whatever. But to me, it's like, if the show's at 8, then like, okay, at 7, just forget everything. Like, I get it. You have a shitty agent and LA parking fees are outrageous and like, whatever, you know, like relationships are awful. Mm-hmm. Whatever is happening, like whatever, it's not happening right now. Mm-hmm. And for the next couple of hours, you're an actor in Hollywood. And like, you know, that's what you wanted to be when
you were
6 and 7 and 8 and like, just own it. Or like, I'm amazed by people that like, could have a good relationship, like their romantic relationship, but they're always mad. and I'm like, you wanted to get married, you know, like, you wanted, like, is there anything you enjoy this about this person?
Right. Wow. Oh my God. We have some friends who are like that too. Like, we will not bring up names, but like,
it's like, do you not enjoy this at all? Like,
no. Well, some people are just maybe just not happy. Yeah, maybe it's like an inner happiness.
I think it doesn't take much to just remind yourself, like, oh, okay. And to know it's not perfect. Like,
just to keep things in perspective.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm so glad you came over today. I still feel like I have like 1,000 more things I want to ask you advice on, but you have to go and I have to go. And like, I have your phone number now, so I can text you. I can email you, text you in the night. Laura,
that's
thinking
right,
about this.
Old-timey letters. Would you please advise me in
please
the following?
Please tell me what to do. Tell people how they can find you and become fans of yours. On the Twitter?
Twitter at I'm Laura House, the letter I and the letter M. Laura House, and at laurahouse.com. Twitter's usually, I usually retweet shows I'm doing pretty easily.
Yeah. Because people can come watch you do stand up sometime if you're doing that again.
I do stand up quite a bit.
Are you putting up your How to Hate Yourself again? Or
I will, but I don't have plans to do it. And there's some videos and stuff on my website for How to Hate Yourself and for stand up and some stories.
So funny.
Thank you. And it's not in the books. I'll do it at some point. But I have a regular Laura House and Friends show at Flappers Burbank.
I want to come to that. Yeah. I want to be in that.
You do? All right.
I need to come.
We'll have you do a dance.
Jeff Ahern is trying to get me to come and do his show too. And I'm just like, I want to do something weird though. Like, I don't want to. I'm still thinking about it. All right. So also too, I'm going to put everything up on my website about Laura House where they can find you. Oh. You have a podcast too.
Yeah. You can get to that from my website as well. But yeah, Laura House at Large.
Laura House at Large.
Yeah.
I love it.
I just talk about different stuff. I'm at Large.
There you go. Wherever. I'm everywhere and all over. Seriously, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed it very much. You guys go to motherhoodinhollywood.com to find out more information about Laura. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. And of course, you can follow me on Facebook and Instagram, Motherhood in Hollywood, and Twitter at MIH Podcast. I think we covered them all. I think I got all of it covered, right? Thanks, you guys. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye, moms.
Balls.